Hi, everybody. I'm Jack L., and I'm an alcoholic. And you want to repeat that announcement, but a lot louder. I want to thank my friend Rebecca for inviting me to participate in the meeting tonight. I guess I spent about 2 years over in that other room sitting in the desk directly behind Rebecca. Well, you could say I know the back of her head. I also want to thank my friend Fred, your other secretary. Fred does a good job. He did something that good secretaries do tonight. When I got here, he came up to me and in his customary warmth and humility, put me at ease for the meeting. And when he looked at me and said, "If you're dull up there, I'm going to break your kneecaps." But I love having Fred at any meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that I attend, because he always is the only guy in the room that makes me look friendly. And I love Fred, and he knows that. Just a quick declaration I want to make. Now, a lot of you have often heard me make comments about speakers in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I just, I want you to know that that was very wrong of me. We all know that judgment is the wrong thing to do, but I'm very happy to be here. I got to tell you that some of you know this because of Oliver Dickens, we sometimes have to change rooms, and I honestly can't even go in the other room because I get very claustrophobic. And I'm a little bit nervous tonight because of the setup of this room, but I know that AA meetings are so full of love. I'm sure in no time at all I'll be at ease once again. If you're new this evening, I'm here to welcome you and to tell you that if you're feeling resistant toward having to be here, that you're on track. That's exactly how I felt when I got here. And it's a very natural feeling to not want to be here if you're new. I'm sure I get very worried about people who come in one or two nights and say they've turned around in the last 48 hours. They love everyone in AA and that their entire life has changed. And I always get a little suspicious of those people, as some of you have often heard me say, it's you miserable ones that are really going to make it. So if you feel that way, just come back to another meeting and keep coming back, because if you're anything like me, your mind will do you in. It'll make you take actions that are self-destructive. I don't fight a drink today. I'm not having a problem wanting to have a drink today. My problem is generally just how to operate in my particular circumstances in life and try to remain somewhat comfortable and calm and keep my frustrations down to a minimum, and above all, not perform the kinds of acts that make me hate myself. I'm not here to tell you how to stay sober, to get sober. I don't profess to know how to do that. But what I might be able to tell you a little bit about is some of the things that I do in my life so that I don't hate myself the way that I used to. I don't want to wake up with remorse every morning like I did before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and certainly since then I've done that too. But before I got here, I woke up with remorse practically every morning, certainly every morning after taking a drink. When I say taking a drink, you think, well, what, one drink? Well, I never took one drink. When I take a drink of alcohol, everything in my life changes focus. The only thing I care about after I take a drink is having my second drink. I want that second drink, and if you're between me and that second drink, then I will cajole or finesse or do whatever it takes to move forward to my second drink. And if you offer me a drink in your home and you don't offer me the second drink right away, then I don't really hear anything you say after that. You know, I was thinking before I got up here that it's an amazing thing when you give a talk in AA before the meeting, that is when you're here but the meeting hasn't started, or even at a meeting where there are other speakers before, or birthdays, you don't hear a single thing. Then when you get up at the podium, there isn't a sound that goes by that you don't pick up on. Very strange. But if you don't offer me that second drink, then I wait until you leave the room, perhaps to answer the phone or to go to the restroom or to get another Pepsi for yourself. And I slyly go to your bottle and I pour myself a drink, but before I close the bottle, I take a few long tugs off the bottle while you're out of the room, because I know I'm going to need that. I know I'm going to need that, and if you come back in and you catch me with that drink helping myself, I'm going to try to explain to you that it wasn't because I needed the drink, but there's just something about the amber of Canadian Club held against the sunlight at 11 o'clock in the morning. It was so incredibly beautiful that I wanted to experience it a second time. As I say, today I don't fight alcohol. I'm not moved emotionally to take a drink. You know, the guys that I sponsor, the people that I work with in Alcoholics Anonymous, so they don't generally call me and tell me that they're fighting a drink or that they feel like taking a drink, especially if they have some substantial numbers of sobriety. What they call me about is the same kind of thing that I suffer from, and that is the kinds of things that come up in one's life on a daily basis, the kinds of frustrations and depressions and the anger and all of the kinds of stuff that happen. I have this kind of stuff happen to me all the time. I'm just finished taking an algebra class over at Los Angeles Valley College, and I was studying for the final, I guess it was about week before last. And I had been to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting the day before the final, the evening before the day of the final. And there was this woman there that I had been attracted to, and I went up to her and I got her phone number that night. And then I went home, and the next day I devoted to studying for my algebra final. And a lot of you know that I've had a hard time getting paid for what I generally do on a daily basis in quite a while. And so while I was studying this algebra, which was a chapter on, I think, rationalizing radicals, I was really struggling and toiling to try to get what it was saying, and I just couldn't, and I was getting very frustrated. And that's the kind of thing that kicks me off. As I was getting frustrated, I shifted gears and I thought, you know, why do I even have to take this stupid class? Why am I in this class? I know why. It's because I'm not working right now, and so I'm trying to better myself, trying to expand my chances of getting work. You know, that's why. It's because I'm not working. What I need is a job. I don't need to take this class. Now, I went over and I grabbed the classifieds and a highlighter and a magnifying glass, and I just started to peruse the classifieds. You know, I got to get a job. That's what I need. And I couldn't find anything that I was qualified for. Not anything, you know. But I'm not a tool and die maker. There's so many things in the paper, I don't even know what they are. And I perused this newspaper, And I couldn't find anything, and then I really started to get crazy, and I thought, you know, I can't believe this. You know, why do I have to do this algebra? Why is that teacher humiliating me? Why is he giving me this stuff that, does he really think that people understand this stuff? Because I don't. How do these 20-year-olds in my class, they obviously can't understand it. I got to get a job, but I can't find a job in the classifieds. And then I tried to think of something good. You know, I thought about that woman and his phone number I got. And I thought, what's the point? Why would I even call her? I'm stupid. And I don't have a job. And I can't get a job. And she's not going to want to go out with me if I don't have a job. Gold digging bitch. Then something rather profound happened. And something that I have learned in my experience in the last 14 plus years in Alcoholics Anonymous. After I heard my mind go through all of that, the next thing that happened was I thought, well, I guess I got to go back to the top of Rationalizing Radicals and read that chapter again. That's what I have to do. Because it doesn't matter what's going on in my head. You know, it doesn't matter what's going on in my head. I just got to get back to what I know. What I have come to understand are the actions that I have to take in order to serve myself in a positive way. In a positive way. Before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I tried to serve myself all the time, but it wasn't in a positive way. Most of the things I did were self-serving, and they were designed to further me and to not care about you. And then in the next morning when I woke up sober, I was full of remorse. And if you're new here today and you're full of remorse, I'm here to tell you that you don't have to feel that way anymore. If you stick around here and you don't drink, you won't have to be filled with remorse anymore. I'm not telling you you're going to be happy. That's not necessarily true. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't guarantee that you're going to be happy. But you know what? It offers you the eligibility to be happy. For the very first time in my life, I'm eligible to be happy, and I never was before. Now, what I do with that is up to me. And I'm having a hard time right now. I had to go to a temp agency yesterday to sit there and be interviewed by a couple of 23-year-old women. And one of them was saying to me that when we send you on these jobs, Jack, you have to have a good attitude. You have to look like you really care, you're enthusiastic, you want to be in there, you want to support the company. And I was given one of these. And then at one point she said, you know, I really pat myself on the back for knowing a person's character. In one of these interviews, it's important, you know. I mean, after all, our clients count on us. We want to send out people that we can rely on. And she told me that one time she was talking to a guy for 45 minutes, and he seemed like a terrific guy, the perfect company man. And when she sent him out, very confidently, the next day, she got a phone call from the clients, the firm to whom she sent this guy, and they called and said, look, we don't understand. I mean, who is it? It's 11 o'clock in the morning, and these are her words, this guy's skunk drunk. And I forgot where I was for a brief moment. You know, I'm used to being at AA meetings, so when she said that, I went, so I take a drink of alcohol, and then I want another drink, and another drink, and another drink, and then I start to take actions that are unfortunately result in my feeling ashamed the next day. I never went into a blackout. We have what we call blackouts in Alcoholics Anonymous, and for those of you who may not be familiar with the term, it has to do with drinking so much, more than your capacity, that you're actually walking around living your life, but you're unaware of what you're doing. And if you're new and you've experienced that, you might just be in the right place. If you don't know what you're doing when you're drunk and have no idea where you've been or how fast you're driving, as a matter of fact, even if you don't think you're in the right place, I certainly support you here. And I never came out of such a state of mind in my drinking, feeling proud of myself. Sometimes you wake up in the middle of a blackout and discover just what it is that you're doing. And I assure you, I never came out of a blackout passing out sandwiches on Skid Row. I never came out doing anything. Now, whatever I did, I was ashamed of it. Let me assure you right now, that's not my fault. I didn't do, I'm not at all responsible. I come from the John Bradshaw School of Responsibility. That was the work of my wounded weasel. I was very full of remorse and shame for a long, long time, and I don't have to feel that way anymore. I really don't. And I have to choose. I have to be around people, and I have to talk to a sponsor who is able to indicate to me what the right move is at a given time, you know, because sometimes I'm self-serving by nature. I just care about me. And one of the things I try to do in Alcoholics Anonymous these days is, as often as I can, I want to enter any kind of a situation that involves other people, certainly people I care about, and just for a moment, even if it's like a game, just try and figure out what it might be like to enter the situation from their point of view rather than my own, you know, not to just move into any situation thinking about how it's going to serve me. And I certainly am not capable of doing that all the time, but it's a numbers game in Alcoholics Anonymous. I try to get my numbers up as much as I can. It's tough. It's tough if you're new, and it's tough if you've been around for a while. I remember reading this book called Somebody Up There Likes Me not too long ago. And it's a book about Rocky Graziano, the middleweight champion boxer. And in that book, talks about how he was the first guy to ever knock down Sugar Ray Robinson in one of the fights. And I knocked him down, but Robinson got back up and eventually won the fight. But one of the things Rocky Graziano was saying in there, which he was talking about as if it was tremendously unique and special, was that he said that while he was in this fight, and he really wanted to tag Robinson, that while he was dancing around, he just thought about everybody in his whole life that had ever hurt him. And he just tried to stir that up. And he tried to get it all to move through his body into his arm and his fist. You know, he thought about every single person in his whole life that had ever hurt him. And after he did that, he tagged Sugar Ray Robinson. And considered that to be quite special. I really don't know why that's so special. I usually do that before breakfast. I really do. I really do. Brown Alcoholics Anonymous, we tell you not to be resentful, you know, that it's a number one killer. And unfortunately, my experience has been that sometimes it's just the number one time killer. You know? Just kind of wander around and do a little sport resenting. That's kind of fun. what's important, I have discovered for myself, is not that I have resentments, but that I harbor them. Because I don't know about anybody else, but it is my nature to resent. I can resent very easily. It's just like when people say, you know, I've finally been able to get past judging anybody since I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I realize right away that they're a lot better than I am because I'm judging them right after they say that. I can see some faces out here who want to hear a little bit about getting drunk. And believe me, I did that. Did a lot of drinking in my time. As a matter of fact, I guess I first discovered the power of alcohol when I was just about rounding junior high, going into high school, and I lived in a small town up in Central California, and Mrs. Romuck used to travel around from town to town and teach ballroom dancing to those who were interested. And I remember I wanted to expand my horizons when I was in around the 8th grade or 9th grade, and so I signed up for a class. Didn't know too much about dancing or women or any of that. It's a small farm town, and wanted to get ready for some of those high school dances that were coming up. You know, wanted to look good. Always been very important in my life to look good, even if I was laying in the gutter. It's always good to come off well. And I took Mrs. Womack's class, and one of the things that she taught me was never, you know, when you go to a dance, you want to be a proper young man. You know, you want to have class when you go to a dance. And what you do, for instance, when you go to a high school dance, is you decide, you know, who you want to dance with. You see them across the gym floor, and then you walk over, and when the dance begins, you go up to somebody, and I did. You know, I did exactly what she told me. You go up and say, "May I have this dance?" Like a proper young man. And I tried that. After I'd taken her classes, I started going to high school dances and taking that incredibly long walk across the gym floor, which just was so tough. And I would, you know, but I'd go up and I'd try to stand straight and tall, and I'd go up to some girl that I really found appealing, and I'd walk up to her and I'd say, "May I have this dance?" And I remember I always felt really good because she indicated that she'd actually taken some classes in etiquette herself, and she'd look at me and say, "No, you may not." And it was shortly after that I discovered alcohol. And I remember going to a couple of school dances when I had some alcohol. And sitting there when my song began, I didn't walk across the gym floor. I bebopped. When I got over there, I didn't go into any kind of formal "May I's" or "Would you do me the honors?" I just gave her one of these. And I'm sure some of you can attest to, especially those of you who sponsor anybody, women seem to like that. I used to get a lot of dances that way. You know, it's been a really, actually, it's been a fairly decent year for me so far. Fairly decent, okay? I haven't really felt any gut-wrenching anger so far this year. And I haven't found myself bolting upright in the middle of the night, you know, nauseated with fear. I haven't caught myself whimpering, lying in the fetal position so often that, you know, I gotta turn the TV on its side for convenience. And I haven't had to yell at anybody to do it my way so far this year. Well, it's really kind of nice not to be in love. So I'm sure there are people here who can attest. And by the way, if you're new, you may have heard people declare that it's a bad idea that you get involved emotionally with anyone of the opposite sex in your first year around Alcoholics Anonymous. Interesting notion, isn't it? Honorable, certainly. It's a great idea. Great idea. We just get people to adhere to it. But they don't. I've never really had any of the people that I've ever sponsored in my 14 years, I've never had anybody come up to me and say, Jack, God, I've met this woman. I know we're not, I met this woman and I'm just crazy about her. I really want to move on it. I really want to go with it. What do you think? And I haven't said, we don't get involved with anyone our first year in Alcoholics Anonymous. Whenever I found myself saying that to one of the people I sponsor, I have never once in my 14 years had that person look at me and go, hey, that's a good idea. My God, you're a good sponsor for telling me that. Never. The only people I know in Alcoholics Anonymous who've never gotten involved emotionally their first year are those who have not had the opportunity. And I say, if we want to be realistic about it, if we're really going to put some sort of a realistic time, because 1 year is not very realistic. What does that say? It says that on day 366, you're now ready. Well, I don't think that, I was ready on day 366. I know people in this room that can attest to that. By the way, it's always good to see Don and Tanya here. They, I sort of adopted them as my relationship sponsors some 10, 12 years ago, and they have they've always served me well, especially lately. I haven't been involved with anybody in 5 years. So. If I haven't told you how much I appreciate that. But if we're going to tell anybody, and give them a realistic time limit, I say this. Let's tell newcomers, don't get involved with anyone in Alcoholics Anonymous ever. That's realistic. I come from a small town in Central California, as I told you, and my parents were from another country, and they had accents, and they just a little bit funny, and they were pretty wild. As a matter of fact, my father and my mother fought quite a bit, and we lived on a farm, and one day, true story, my father and my mother got in a huge fight, and he marched out, as men often do. I've done it myself. I used to jump in the car and lay rubber as I left our house. But we were on a farm, and my dad actually went out of the house and walked about 60 yards and started building a second house. My parents, we of course lived with my mom, but my dad was 100 yards away in this other place. And we used to, we used to finish dinner, and then my mom would say, where are you going? I'd say, go say hi to dad, and I'd walk over there, and he'd tell me, they didn't drink, he would just tell me about, how my mother had, not treated him well, and so on and so forth. And, geez, you really kind of drill that kind of stuff into my head, I guess, for a long time. Glad it never affected me, though. My mother had a great trick that she used to use. It was just, it's really mind-boggling. I don't think I've ever heard of anybody ever saying anything like this before. My mother, who died of a malignant brain tumor when I was 14 years old, always had headaches. Every day had headaches. That is fun. Doesn't bother me. It's a long time ago. She had headaches every single day, and what she would do is, if she wanted us to do something, whereas most parents raise their hand to their child, she was such a tragedy queen that when she told me what to do and I resisted, she would raise her hand and threaten to hit herself on the head. That's true. And she used to stand around there and bonk herself on the head 6 or 7 times and use guilt to make me do anything that she wanted. And so at the age of 17, where I was staying with my brothers and sisters, and one of my brothers, older brothers, is married, and I wanted to get away from those people. So I came here to Los Angeles. And I didn't want to be thought of as foreign. Didn't really want to be a foreigner in people's eyes. I wanted to think of myself as a Steve McQueen kind of a guy. A blonde hair, blue eyes kind of guy that takes charge. That's what I really wanted. And that's how I really tried to think of myself. I knew I didn't look like that, but I really wanted to have that attitude. And I came down here, and people would come up to me sometimes, and I had a mustache at the time. Remember I had a mustache at the time. Remember my brothers used to come and visit me every once in a while, you know, and I would have a friend and I'd say, you know, I didn't want to introduce you to my brother, and I'd introduce the brother, and I would look at my brother and I'd think, oh man, you know, looks so foreign. And then the guy I introduced him to would look at me and he'd say, my God, Jack, your brother looks just like you. Yes, and so I didn't have my family come visit me anymore, you know, because they were blowing my cover. And it meant a lot to me that I don't come off as foreign. And I remember when I had a mustache, from time to time somebody would come up to me and say, you know, Jack, you remind me of a celebrity. I'm trying to think of who it is on that. Oh, yeah, I got it. I said, yeah, Steve McQueen, right? This guy would say, Omar Sharif. Now, you know, if you don't want to be thought of as a foreigner, you don't want anybody calling you Omar. That's for sure. After I got sober and I went over to the Pacific Group for 6 years, I remember some guy coming up to me and saying, hey, Jack, you remind me of a celebrity. And I thought, yeah, Omar Sharif. He said, Liberace. Remember thinking, oh my God, please let me be Omar Sharif. That's kind of a thing that can get you drunk a lot of times, you know, because I didn't like who I was. And when I take a drink of alcohol, I was telling some people last night, you know, it's just very simple. Whatever the problem, whatever the anxiety that I'm feeling, whatever the anger that I'm feeling, whatever the depression that I'm feeling, if I'm talking to you and you're saying, what are we going to do about this, Jack? How are we going to work out our marriage? How are we going to work out our relationship? I don't hear that. What I hear from myself is just, I got to get to a drink. Because that's going to make it okay. I'm going to be okay. I don't have to address any of this stuff. I don't have to improve myself. I don't have to, you know, look at the psychological aspects of anything. I don't have to do any of that as long as I can get to a drink. Because if I can get to a drink, I'm going to be okay. I know that. And I told myself that for 17 years. And if you're new, I'm going to tell you something. Yesterday, I had a bad, bad day. And whereas years ago I would have said, it's going to be okay if I just get to a drink, I said, it's going to be okay if I just get to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you may say, well, isn't it just another crutch? I mean, come on. Maybe. But I didn't get drunk and I didn't do anything self-destructive. So if it's a crutch, I'd take it anyway. Because it's been good to me. Alcoholics Anonymous has been good to me. You know, friends have come and gone, women have come and gone, jobs have certainly come and gone. And Alcoholics Anonymous has remained. It has taken care of me. But it's just been here all the time, you know, and I don't want to ever take it for granted. I said earlier that I want to participate in this meeting. I want to thank Rebecca for allowing me to participate in this meeting. But standing behind the podium is only one form of participating in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd like to think that I participate in every meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that I attend, because there are many, many ways, and sometimes the bare minimum way of participating in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous is just to occupy my seat and not disrupt the meeting. And how about that? That's participating in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous to me when I'm not doing anything else. I participate in my Friday night meeting on a regular basis and have for practically 10 years, putting away chairs. It's a dreary job. But when I leave, I never have any gnawing feeling of guilt about, hey, I guess I didn't do anything for this meeting, you know? Alcoholics Anonymous, I was taught early, was not something for me to come in and take from. And so I like to think that I participate in any meeting, and I clap when, you know, sometimes people give me a hard time because I try to clap enthusiastically even when I don't feel like it. And I was taught that. I was told when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous that I had to clap when somebody got up and then gave a talk or took a birthday, you know, and I didn't want to. And I actually remember asking my sponsor when I first got here, well, how many times do I have to clap? And he said, just clap. And I thought, well, the only way I'm going to be able to pull this off is I'll clap 25 times every time somebody takes a cake or whatever. And I started doing that. I was over in a Pacific group, and I actually counted my claps. Counted 25 claps every time. And today, I still do all my claps. I don't count them anymore. For a long time, I did 25. I didn't even count them. Right? But just to give you an idea of how the enthusiasm is worn down, you can't do 25 claps at most meetings. You can't even do 20. Because if you do, all you're going to hear is yourself going... You can get away with about 10 or 12 claps in Alcoholics Anonymous these days. And I remember when 25 could be hidden in a multitude of other people clapping. So I want Alcoholics Anonymous to keep going. You know, and if I got to come in here and keep participating, then that's what it takes for me. And things are not going too well right now. You know, I'm grateful to God that I'm sober. I really am. It's a miracle. It's a miracle. It's the thing that makes me believe that there is a God. I tried to quit drinking for years and years and years. And I made it a lot of times. I just couldn't stay stopped. And since I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm not going to tell you why, because I don't know. I just know when I got here, I was told to do certain things. I've been doing them now for over 14 years, and it seems to work. But I do have a tough time. You know, life is about things happening. Life does not stop when you get to Alcoholics Anonymous. It goes on. And like I said, I'm only eligible to be happy. It doesn't mean I'm going to be. Certainly not going to be happy all the time. And as far as success, you know, I feel very unsuccessful today. But I was listening to one of these Tony Robbins tapes a few years ago before he was really popular. It was like a bootleg tape. And I remember one of the things he said, which I found very interesting, was he defined success. And he said it was, success was doing what you want, when you want, where you want, with who you want, as often as you want. Well, you know, if nothing else, that's a very distinct definition of success. It's really very interesting. It's a bad idea for me to think of success that way, because if I did what I want, lay around.
when I want, 9 to 5, where I want, at home, middle of the weekday, shades drawn, playing some romantic music, with who I want, the sickest, prettiest newcomer I can find. But how often do I want? That measure has never been invented. I'm an alcoholic. That means that when I take a drink of alcohol, I can't predict what's going to happen to me. Actually, I can pretty much predict what's going to happen to me. It's not going to be good. You know, it's not going to be good. It's not going to be something that I'm proud of. And that's one of the things that makes me an alcoholic, the idea that I think I can continue to do this. I mean, I did it for 17 years. I didn't come here because it suddenly didn't work. I've heard people say that before. I'm not one of those people. Still worked. Still provided an escape for me. I still got drunk. But my life was such an incredible shambles that it was very difficult to deal with it when I got sober. I mean, I had to do something. And thank God I got in here. Thank God I got into Alcoholics Anonymous. For some strange reason, I'll tell you what else makes me an alcoholic, I think. For some odd reason, for about the last 3 years, I think they showed the Ten Commandments on TV on Easter, 4 hours or something. And I just happened to be going to bed at about 11:30 during the last 20 minutes of it. And I'm the kind of guy who usually turns on the TV just after I get into bed for a few minutes. And it's kind of hard to, you know, turn down the parting of the Red Sea at that point, because that's usually what's going on about 20 minutes before the end of the movie. So I watch the parting of the Red Sea sequence, and after that, the Israelites get over to the other side, and, you know, they're all very, very grateful that they made it. They thank God, and it's just so marvelous that they got away from Yul Brynner and the rest. And then they kind of dissolve, and the narrator comes on, and that is Cecil B. DeMille himself. He's got a deep voice, and he starts to do this narrative about how Moses has gone up into the wilderness for 40 days and 40 nights, you know, where he's going to get the 10 tablets. And they show this scene where all the Israelites, after he's been gone for just a few days, and along with DeMille's narration, he's saying things like, and then the Israelites indulged in lechery, lust, drunkenness, dancing, lewdness, and you see these people all, you know, having one of the great times, and you just go, yee-haw! You know, I'm laying in bed thinking like that, and I'm thinking, what's so wrong about all this? It's the most appealing thing that I've seen so far in the movie. And it reminds me so much of how I can get between meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous if I wait too long. You know, I can get just the way they did when Moses left them. Because you know what? When I don't go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, said simply, I start going bad. That's what happens to me. And so I just got to keep going. And it has nothing to do with whether I enjoy it or not. It has nothing to do, I mean, you know, it can be very dreary. It can be very uninteresting. It doesn't matter to me. That was not part of the deal. The deal was I just had to come here and look like I cared. That's all I have to do. I come here, I don't disrupt the meetings, I look like I care. And you know, if you think, well, hey, I can't do that, I can't look like I care. Yeah, you can. If you can't, see me afterward, I'll give you a few techniques on how to look like you're interested while somebody's up at the podium. I'm very happy to be sober today. I never really thought I'd get sober. I never really thought I'd give up alcohol. I can remember having thoughts like, I love my wife, and I pretty much love my life right now, but I'd be willing to give those things up before I'd ever give up alcohol. I don't want to give up alcohol. The one thing I'm certain of is that I am not going to give up alcohol because alcohol works like a charm. It always has. It's always been good to me, and I'm not going to give it up no matter what. That was my attitude. Now, that might be your attitude. Well, here I am 14 years later. I gave it up. It's gone. It's gone, and I don't know how long it's going to be gone. It may not be for very long. I can't guarantee that I'm going to stay sober. I can't guarantee that if you stay here and you're new, you're going to stay sober. But I do feel this guarantee is valid, that if I get drunk and I'm out in a bar some night and I'm having another drink and I'm thinking about how miserable I feel, I'm going to remember something. And I guarantee myself this. I'm going to remember that even though it's tough sometimes, the life that I've had in Alcoholics Anonymous, sober, is the best life that I've ever had. Thanks. Yeah.